Hi, everyone. I'm Celia Keenan-Bolger, and this is Sunday Pancakes, a podcast to nourish your head and heart any day of the week. How are we doing? So, for this episode, I had three separate conversations with my guest. I have never done that before for this podcast. The first conversation happened towards the end of March, and then the second happened this past Sunday, and then the last one happened the day after that on Monday. Now, you're only going to hear one of the conversations, the Sunday night one, but the other two, and especially our last one, really impacted the way that I thought about how I was going to introduce this episode. On Monday, Karen Olivo and I talked about the intent of this conversation, why we were having it, and what we were trying to accomplish. And I think when I initially reached out to her way back in March, it was because I had always felt like they were a bold and public figure in our industry, and I not only admired their work on stage, but I was also really interested in her relationship to our business. But then when we talked this past week, I think I was looking for someone whose approach in this work of social justice was different from my own, to see how we might work together towards the same goals of making a more equitable, just, and compassionate industry. And so while we talked, we decided that it should be a conversation without real answers. And I think we're so programmed to immediately ask people, and I think especially people who might think differently from us, for solutions. And I think when we do that, we miss this big step of trying to understand each other better. So this isn't really a conversation that has a lot of answers or solves a lot of problems, but I do think we get to talk about our own perspectives and experiences and how they differ, but also how they have led us to our respective positions. I was just listening to this interview with the author, Tressie McMillan Cottom, and she wrote the book Thick, and she talks about two different kinds of conversations. The first she categorizes as a thin conversation, and that attempts to flatten the differences between experiences and assumes that the better way to understand something is to lean into what's universal about it. A thick conversation, on the other hand, is nuanced, and it highlights our differences and shines a light on how someone else experiences the world. I feel so proud and so lucky to have gotten into the thickness with Karen Olivo. So since the last time we talked, some things have happened, both in our business and in your personal life. Will you tell me how you're doing, first of all?
Today I'm actually great. It was a little touch and go there for, a week and a half, but now I'm feeling pretty good.
What was the touch and go? What was that? How did that show?
When you blow up your own life.
Do you mind talking about specifically what happened?
I decided to not go back to Moulin Rouge right after an article was posted in the Hollywood Reporter about Scott Rudin and the things that he had done to a lot of people. And I was already struggling with going back because I knew that I was going to have to be an accountability entity and also the star of a Broadway show, and still was really sort of foggy on where the money was going to go. And then our industry was incredibly quiet about what was happening to Scott Rudin. And because I'm a survivor of domestic abuse and also rape, I'm someone who I don't hear those kinds of allegations. When someone says allegations, I'm like, that person put everything on the line to say something. So it's truth immediately. I'm like, oh, you just have to believe people like that. And so I had a really sort of, the best way I can say is like, I sort of cracked open a little bit about how this industry says that they hold people. And in this moment, this group of individuals who had put everything on the line to mount most of our shows were saying, we need support, and we could not offer support to them because of the way that the industry is built. And so I decided, not only am I not going to go back, but I'm not going to go back and protest, because it's so evident to me that we're moving into a space where Broadway is going to open up, and we're not thinking about people, we're thinking about profits. So that, and I did it in an IG live because there's no way, I'm realizing, to control your own narrative unless you do it yourself. And a lot of people feel like that is very risky and juvenile. But one of the things that I see, and I've seen for 20 plus years, is I say one thing and something else is actually printed. And so I was like, I'm not taking chances. I'm doing it myself.
When I watched that Instagram, I will be honest, I felt so, there were so many things inside of it that you said that I knew were right, and that I was so appreciative of you putting out there to the community. And I also felt scared and judged, and I was like, how am I got to sit with this for a little bit, because I think, and I'm still sitting with this part of it, which is that I'm not ready to leave this business. And I think when I keep thinking about those Republicans in the last 4 years, and these horrible things would happen, and there was just radio silence. And I think the story that they told themselves was, we can do more work from the inside than if we just leave. And I was like, well, I don't happen to see any of that work. And so after your video came out, I was like, am I one of those Republicans? Am I one of those senators that's like, I'm going to stay on the inside and I'm going to try to fix the system, but I'm not really saying anything? But I think part of what I'm so grateful for, I mean, I'm so grateful for social media, particularly in the ways of social justice, but I'm not grateful for it in nuanced conversation. And I think what you're saying is similar to this, which is like, you can put something out there and you're like, I would now like to continue to talk about this. But of course, then everything is just like, it feels just black and white, that there is the, then you don't get to actually explore the gray on social media. And so I guess what I'm interested, if you have a perspective about what it looks like to stay in the industry and try to do the work, like, what do you have any ideas about what that might look like?
You know, this is the thing. I think that in the same way that no one could have helped me make the decision that I made for myself, this is like something where I really can't speak to what everyone's individual sort of like, I mean, even though I would really love to help you, because I don't want you to be without. I mean, there are things that are already in place that you can sort of tag yourself onto. But as far as like the personal thing, I don't know. I can say for myself, I knew that, knowing what I know, right, that the industry is, you know, Broadway specifically, if we're going to be really, really, is real estate, right? And it hasn't really truly been about vision all the time, and like forwarding art. It has been a little bit more about like, how, what can we get up that will get enough Tony Awards that we can put on tour, that we can actually recoup and make money? That's not new to anyone. I knew for me, knowing that, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's what that is. And I want to make art. And I keep coming into the industry expecting it to change, and it won't change. And then I was like, I know what I'll do. Last year, I'll insert myself into the industry. I'll talk to producers. I'll put myself in rooms with them, and I'll give them, literally bringing them tools, how to change their model so that it can be more equitable, so that it can actually be about the art, and we can start working on some of the systemic racism that lives and the levels of oppression that live within our industry. And through that time, what I was seeing was that everyone was like, yes, great idea. And then the things would be put in front of them and they'd be like, okay, I'm going to choose that one. And I'd be like, oh, cool. Okay, well, that one is going to do a lot. But also, what about all of these other people? And they're like, yeah, but isn't that one enough, that one right there? And I was like, oh, right. Okay, so the industry is not going to change. So for me, I was like, knowing what I know and knowing the rooms that I've been in and seeing what people, how much work people have done and how much people work haven't, how much work people haven't done, I can't put myself in that position again. And I do know a handful of people who have said a lot of things that I'm hearing from you, which is like, I don't want to leave the industry. You know, I've worked my entire life to be here. I love this industry. I also love this industry, but people can take different amounts of things. And for me, this is, you know, this is about my kid, truthfully. Like, my kid's going to go into the industry. My kid's super talented. All of these kids that I teach, that I've been teaching for this past year, are all sickly talented. They're all going there. And every single time I step into the commercial theater ring, I tell them to come with me because they watch me. And I know it's not safe. So for me, I'm like, I can't endorse you. I can't endorse you because I can't trust that you're going to take care of my kids.
There's a lot in there that absolutely resonates to me. And I think I have been so lucky. I don't feel like I don't come from the, I've worked so hard to, you know, for this, you can't tell me not to come back. My experience is that I feel like I have gotten to make art on Broadway. And
awesome.
That's an extremely lucky position to be in. I have not made money. I think the part of it that I have to reconcile, and that I think I was actually faced with this past year, is that doing this thing is like oxygen to me. It feels, it's not about money. It is about creative expression and getting to know myself better and hopefully representing humanity and bringing us, you know, closer to understanding one another. But I also understand that that experience is because I'm a white lady. I mean, I think that my sort of harm, what I've endured in inside of our business, which is, you know, I've had, as we all have, abuse. And I'm starting to draw some lines for myself about the ways that I think about that abuse, which is like, well, I signed up for this, you know, this is just what it is. And it's like, that's an abused point of view. That's how we make excuses. And so I guess what I'm interested in is, how do we, understanding that everybody has a different place in the social justice ecosystem, how do we feel like we can make space for all of the different ways that people can show up and without, while still holding ourselves accountable?
I mean, this is the thing. This is another one of the situations where I feel like I only have answers for the human being that I am.
Do you feel like the New York theater community mostly agrees on who and what it is?
The New York theater community. Would we talk about stakeholders, or are we talking about the people who actually do the work?
I'm talking about the people who do the work.
Like actors.
Yeah.
And people backstage and like designers and
creatives.
Do I think that they know who they are, or what part is that what you're saying?
That we all agree on who we are.
No, because in the same way, like, you and I both do the same thing and we don't agree on what we are, right? Mm-hmm. You're something else and I'm something else. And it's really about lived experience, right? And in our evolution in this like new sort of awakening that we're like, oh, right, we have all been oppressed. Every single person here is operating as a racist until we're not. And also we're being oppressed by all these other things. And so depending on where you are in your own journey, there are people that I know that are actors that we agree on what we are based on what we've learned, but others no. And I think that's okay, because how can we all?
But then I was just going to say, is it okay if we don't know, if we don't all agree on who we are? Can we still then work towards a common goal or goals?
And this is where what is the goal? Is the goal to make art? Is the goal to be on Broadway and be commercial? Like, what's the goal? Because there are like multiple goals. This is the issue that I have. And I feel like we're going in the same direction when it comes to like Broadway specifically, until three different companies don't own all of the real estate and decide who gets to make it to these larger houses where everyone sort of comes to get their fix of theater. We're going to be in a situation in which we can't. It's about business. Sorry. It's about business. It's not about the thing. And every once in a while we get like someone decides to like put money behind something and art makes it on the Broadway stage. But my opinion is that it's few and far between.
Yeah. Do you think there are producers? I feel like in your video, you were like, I want to be a part of an industry that values human life and respects humans. Do you feel like there are producers in our industry that value and respect human life?
Yes, I do. I do think that they're also afraid and also oppressed. And that was the whole reason that the Scott Rudin thing made me feel crazy, because there were all these people that I was working with. And before I actually said anything, I was talking to a lot of composers and other people who have stuff that's about to go. And they were all like, yeah, I don't understand why no one's saying anything. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, you're someone. I'm someone. And they're like, yeah, but even all these directors, they won't say anything. And I'm like, well, if you are the person you say you are, person talking to me, like if you say that you are that person and you value human life, then do you realize that by not saying something, we're telling all the predators out there that it's okay to do these things? We're also erasing the trauma of these survivors that risked everything. Like, that's humanity. We're in a moment right now where we can actually show our humanity. And look, I should also say, the reason I feel so, so strongly is the night before I actually did that IG live, some of the survivors had asked me to be a part of their forum just to sit as they held space, because a lot of them had not talked about it in a forum. And most of them were too afraid to even turn on their cameras. And so I sat there and I wondered why I was asked, but they were like, you and a handful of other people were like the only people in our industry that acknowledged what happened to us. That's the test of if you're a good human, is if no one knows that you're actually stepping in for someone, or you're hurt, you're trying to help someone who's hurt, and you'll never get credit for it. And it's just the thing that you have to do. And so with producers who are like, I am a good person, I'm like, great, show me your good person, please. When it's so evident that our industry is crying for someone to be like, I have ethics, I have integrity, I will protect bodies in this space, then do it.
I think it's so the sort of public part of it. I think for all of the people who are on social media, who, you know, have a long history of trying to say like, I stand for this, I stand for this. And then it's interesting. Like, I think we went through 4 years of feeling like we were totally powerless, and that it felt like everything we did didn't have an impact. And then suddenly we were given a moment where we actually could do something.
Yeah.
And it was very scary. But I think there are a lot of people who are not on social media and who are also doing good work. Can we hold space for them in this fight?
So I would just assume, like, if you're not like a public person, which it's hard to say, like, When you say public person, what does that mean?
I guess I mean more like have an Instagram profile. I guess I'm even thinking about producers, because a lot of producers or just actors without that, you know, are trying to figure out where they fit in this ecosystem.
Or maybe what I'm trying to say is the only way to show up by going public?
No.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it is. But I do think that it says something to, I mean, this is just about like abuse and the culture that surrounds it, how people are groomed and how we've all been groomed to sort of take abuse, is that if you are not really clear about your boundaries in a very vocal way, you can't be like, oh, please don't do that to me. It's not going to work. They're going to do the same thing over and over to you. And so as a group of people who've decided to be a part of an industry, part of the reason that I am so vocal has to do with, I need everyone to know that these are my boundaries. And if you cross me, I will take you out, because I cannot afford to have you mistreat me. I can't do it. And I think that when we all say that, we tell the culture of our industry, it will not be tolerated. Now, if people are like, I'm too afraid to say something, are you too afraid to say something in the room? Hopefully that's not the case, right? But most people who are do what we do, we have an outward persona. And we're there, this is the other reason. We're there because, I mean, this is like the service industry, even though we love what we do, if we were no good and if people didn't like us and were not fans of us and no one wanted to see us in things, we wouldn't get hired, right? So like we have, there's a platform, there are people who come to see us in things, and we actually owe it to those people in places to be like, yeah, this is the person, this is the thing that you're buying.
When you talk about like, I want to go away and make my art, what does that look like?
I mean, look, there's stuff here in Madison that I can do. Streaming has become something that's, people are actually doing some really good work streaming wise. Creating opportunities for other people in a really small setting just to make art, to dream something up and put it on a stage. I don't think that it necessarily has to be in New York anymore. For so many reasons. There's so much economic violence in New York right now. You have to have a certain amount of money just to exist. And then when we talk about marginalized communities, like no one's getting to New York and not living with four roommates and working eight jobs to be in a Broadway show. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so it's like, if I keep saying like, that's the place to go, this is it, that's the only place, then there's a whole group of people that will never make it there. And their dreams deserve to be realized as well. So instead of working towards a system that I know is based in real estate and capitalism, then why not just turn my view to another thing and be like, all right, y'all want to do that? Great. That's incredible. Until you figure out a way to include everyone and to stop harming people, then we'll do something else.
You know, the part of it that feels uniting is that all of us had some kind of dream to get to do this thing that we really love.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you talk about like the marginalized, it feels like there are people who have never even gotten like the chance to be like, you know what, that was not as good as I thought it was going to be, as all of us at some point did, but like they at least deserve to have that. And they most certainly deserve to keep working towards it and to feel like there is a space for them in the industry. And then I feel like they're the middle folks of us who get to do it. And then I feel like there are the top people that I think of like as the patriarchy, but you know, could be any number of things of like, you know, power. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think sometimes the marginalized, because they have had so little given to them. And then when a release valve sort of go, you know, is pulled, the trauma and the pain that has been carried for so long, it hits the people in the middle to say, you have to help us. You have to come along and join us in this fight. But it never reaches the top. And I want us to figure out how the middle and the marginalized can reach power.
I'm not eliminating middle and the top because they're all oppressed.
I'm coming from the, if we stay inside the structure, and I think you're in the structure is so messed up that we can't even deal with the structure. Do you know what I mean? That I think we have to say, if Broadway continues to exist, and if there are still marginalized people who have never had an opportunity, who don't see themselves represented on Broadway, who still want to pursue this dream, that who are they fighting then? If everybody's oppressed, what are they asking? Who are they asking things from?
I would say first, before who are they asking things from, is like, what is it that they actually have that gives them power? Because you can't ask for something unless you actually have a sense of power. And I think that that's the thing that we're talking about, which is the only thing that we have any sort of, you can't say, give me something. And they're like, who the fuck are you? I don't care. Do you know what I mean? The only thing that you actually have as your power is your participation, your artistry. And so there, that for me, I know no one gives, look, Broadway's going to go on without me. But one thing I can definitely say is the thing that I bring to the stage and only I can bring to the stage, I'm going to take that with me. I think that there's a lot of people in the middle who don't realize that they actually have power because they have been sort of groomed and conditioned. And it has made them fearful, and it has made them like, well, I want this thing so bad. If I actually stand up for myself, then this thing will go away. Or this thing, the structure will think that I don't like it, and therefore I'm not grateful, and they won't ask me back. And that's kind of the thing that we're all in the middle of fighting. Instead of saying, how do we fight within the structure? I think there's like a moment of like, do you realize that the structure is doing this to you? And it's making every single choice that you make about how you can acquiesce to the structure, as opposed to what is it that I want first? Does the structure actually deserve to have what I have?
I'm thinking even beyond the structures that we were just talking about, and who is consuming the art, and how disproportionately white that space is. So if you are just giving of yourself to people who don't necessarily look like you, I think that's a different experience than what my experience is.
You know what's strange? Only in certain situations. When I, like in Hamilton, when I was doing Hamilton, I definitely felt like, you know who actually should be in the audience and who's not? Little black and brown faces and little Asian kids and people. Like, that's what I was like, they actually need this. And it was very rare that we saw that. But other than that, like Moulin Rouge, like, come on, white people. Like, well, I don't have a problem with that. It didn't make me feel like I was being taken advantage of in any way. That didn't. I would like theater to be more accessible, and not, I would like a price point that doesn't, like, you don't have to be making six figures and above to like be able to come to the theater more than twice a year. But I wouldn't say that personally I'm like resentful that there are a bunch of white people coming to see me and things. I really do think a little bit more of like the culture within the building, and also like how the transfer of money is actually happening. It's more about who I'm making money for than it is who comes to see me.
In your dream year, for your own peace in your heart and your brain, what does it look like for the next year?
I'll be just researching different models that involve what does it look like to create theater, to create a safe space for individuals. I think it's important to also say that doesn't mean that I'll never act again. I think I actually will act pretty soon. Finding a troupe or a place in which we can just make sure that we're making art and we're not inflicting any harm, building a better model, that's really all I think I'll be doing. And then, you know, I'll probably have to get a job somewhere. I've already thought about like a handful of places locally where I'll have to like put in an application just to get like a regular gig, just a regular 9 to 5. But that's like, that's part of it. That's that I have to pay bills. So that's what will happen in this year.
I really, really, really appreciate this conversation. I want to have more of them. I think it is, if there is one thing that I know, it is that talking about this is the first step. It's not, I think, understanding one another. And I think that is the place where it feels like I'm so curious, where I think it was on a Broadway Advocacy Coalition call the other day, or on a Instagram, they were like, where's the watering hole? Like, where are we all going back to the source so we can come together and be like, how are we doing? What are we doing? Because social media is not enough. That is not the space for that. Social media strikes the match and gets us doing our own work. But where is the place that we collectively get to show up and say, and look in each other's eyeballs, hopefully sooner rather than later, and say, okay, what are the next steps? That's the thing.
That's the grassroots movement, the arts grassroots movement for this last year has been just that. Like, that's all I've just been on Zoom calls in Zoom rooms with people for like a year, just getting into the room and being like, what's next? What kind of work have you done? What kind of training have you done? Can I take that training? Who offers it? These are the things I'm finding out about myself. It's always been personal. And I think you're right. I think that, you know, there's a reason why overseas, a lot of these like these uprisings happen because of social media. I mean, the government usually like shuts down a lot of their communication. And so social media is the only thing that they have available to them. But this is actually the only way that those who are on these different tiers that you're talking about can actually converse. But when we really collectively decide to start talking to each other and sharing ideas and learning each other's perspectives, that's when we can really be more resourceful and useful in the field, I think. So, I mean, anytime you want to have a Zoom call, I'm game. That's all I do.
I feel like you giving me your time, I know you have a lot of people to answer to right now. And your time is, you know, we got to take care of that. So you giving me yours it's a real gift. It is not lost on me. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure to sit and talk to you.
We'll do it some more.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, good. So there is so much I want to talk about that I learned from that conversation, but I actually think it's more important to encourage you to flag what landed on you, and especially the things that maybe made you feel defensive or uncomfortable. I know that I have a pattern of just shutting down and telling myself, you know what, I'm going to find a person to follow who speaks my language when I'm faced with truths that don't really sit well with me. But I think what I'm learning is that there is actually information in the discomfort. If we can ask ourselves why we feel the way we do and then challenge ourselves instead of the person with whom we may disagree, I think that's when we really start to get to work. And this just makes me think a little bit about our community. I was recently on this panel with the great actor and director Shelley Williams, and she said something like, I believe in our industry's ability to change because making theater means getting it wrong and then going back again and again and again to try to make it right. Social change is hard work and it requires anger and people who yell and mobilize. It requires people who sit quietly and deeply reflect on how they can participate effectively. I think in that same interview with Tressie McMillan-Cottom, she said something like, broadening access or fighting for justice doesn't mean that we make everyone equally comfortable. It means that we all have to be okay with being equally uncomfortable. And I believe in us and our ability to do that. I believe in our willingness to listen and reflect and then try and try and try and try again. Okay, let's get into the weekly roundup for this episode. Obviously, I'm going to recommend this podcast with Tressie McMillan Cottom. It's on the Ezra Klein podcast, and I think it's like one of the best interviews that I've heard this whole year. I think you should listen to it, and then I think you should buy her book, Thick. She also has a podcast with Roxane Gay. The next on the weekly roundup is this guide that I found. I think Broadway Advocacy Coalition introduced it to me this past year, and it's by Deepa Iyer. And it basically, it's called Mapping Our Roles in a Social Change Ecosystem. And Karen and I actually talked about this in one of our three conversations, and about how you sort of map your place. And she said, you know, I'm a disruptor, which means that she takes uncomfortable and risky actions to shake up the status quo. And I think I am more of a weaver, which means that I see the through lines of connectivity between people, places, organizations, ideas, and movements. And you have a place in this ecosystem too. So look up this guide, and then it gives all of these prompts about how to use it. I have found it enormously helpful when I'm feeling overwhelmed about what to do about something. And then finally, I have to recommend Javi Gevinson's article in New York Magazine called Art Doesn't Need Tyrants. It chronicles her personal experience with the producer Scott Rudin and how that relationship impacted her willingness to speak out. And she has this line in it that says, change happens because people with nothing to lose and who the system has rejected act out of necessity and integrity, and because people who do have something to lose decide to disrupt the capitalist cycle. And that's just, I mean, she's such an amazing writer, but there is so much in the article that I think is incredibly thoughtful and that I found very, very useful. I hope this was helpful this week. Thank you all so much for being here with me. I cannot state enough how meaningful this podcast community has become in my life. I think when I set out to make it, I never imagined that I would be having the conversations that I'm getting to have with guests and the engagement that I'm getting to have with listeners. I have just found it unbelievably gratifying, and I am so grateful that you are with me on this sort of hesitant and loose and somewhat messy journey. That's it for this week. I cannot wait for the next episode. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. This week's episode was recorded in New York on the lands of the Lenape peoples. Sunday Pancakes is produced by me and Rachel Sussman of Plate Spinner Productions, with editing and engineering by Tim Kashani and Ali Rice of Apples and Oranges Arts. The theme music is by Gavin Creel. Special thanks to John Conley. Sunday Pancakes is distributed by Playbill.